Welcome, my friends, to the Generations Radio Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you today. Broadcasting from my basement out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado. Trying to restore a little relationship and truth in the lost and lonely postmodern wilderness of the present day. And friends, relationships are pretty much fading in the postmodern life. A highly institutionalized, highly socialized life has displaced the life of family, church, and community of previous centuries. And yes, we are pretty much plugged into the matrix, and we find less and less family relationship, and we're doing what we can to restore that in a lost and lonely world. We need more relationship while socialism is on the rise, while the family has been de-relevantized. And this has affected children, yes. This has affected adults, and certainly it is affecting the elderly. And we as Christians want to bring a distinctively Christian life view to bear in a lost and lonely, cold, cold, institutionalized world of the 21st century. And it's about time to do it. It's about time to do it. Friends, this is impacting the elderly. If Jesus was here, what would Jesus say? What would Jesus do? Of the 75-plussers, those that are over 75 years of age, a quarter of them are living in nursing homes. About 50% of those over 95 are in nursing homes. More than half of 75-plussers live alone in the UK. It's 47% here in America. That means that only about 25% of people 75 and older live in relationship in a warm family-based living condition, friends. We're talking about the slow and steady disintegration of relationships over the decades, over the generations. Only a quarter. I mean, you heard what I said. Only a quarter. Based upon these results I have from the Department of Health and Human Services and ITV.com in the UK, based upon these results, it appears that only 25% of Americans, of people living in the Western world, live in relationship when they're over 75 years of age. Only 25%, only a quarter. Now, in some countries like Germany, the social security system there is shipping them off to Vietnam and Cambodia and other impoverished nations where the care of the elderly is cheaper. But of course, out of community, out of relationship, certainly institutionalized, certainly socialized, certainly the government owns them, controls them, and feeds them. But friends, we're talking about restoring a biblical world and life view, not a Marxist, not a socialist, not a de-relationalized, reinstitutionalized system of the modern world. We're talking about what would Jesus do in this zeitgeist? Please understand that today there are 40 million Americans over 65 years of age. That number will be 72 million, almost double in 20 years from now. Almost double in 20 years from now. Why? Because there are 80 million baby boomers preparing to retire over the next 20 years. Friends, the zeitgeist is not good. The zeitgeist is not good in this country. The respect for human life is lower than it's ever been before. Remember, the 80 million baby boomers, plus the Gen Xers and Gen Yers, aborted 80 million babies in the 1960s, 70s, and 80s and 90s. And now, the respect for life is lower than it's ever been before because we've got the most pro-abortion, pro-infanticide president of the United States elected by the citizenry of the United States, which means that the zeitgeist for the average elderly is not going to be good over the next 20 years. Respect for human life lower than ever before, and if Social Security is in the red or going downhill, there will be less funds in Social Security and Medicare by the year 2030, 2040, period. Everybody knows it. Everybody says it. It may not be bankrupt, but there will be less funds in there for the 80 million retired baby boomers when the worker to retiree ratio will be one third of what it was 50 years ago, 20 years from now. One third, and Social Security will hardly be there for anybody. The socialist control and the socialist systems, the institutionalized care is on the rise. Can you spell euthanasia? Ladies and gentlemen, there's never been a more important time for me to be bringing these topics to bear. And search as I could hardly find anybody speaking about the re-relationalizing of elderly care in the 21st century. I hardly could find anything on the subject of a relational home-based care for seniors. And I thought there's got to be Christians somewhere in America. There's got to be people who want to be a little more like Christ. And not like Marx, and they don't want to institutionalize and socialize the elderly. They want to find a way to re-relationalize care for the elderly in the 21st century. Now, this applies to the elderly in general, but also applies to you and to your family and to how you're going to care for your aging parents and how your children are going to care for you. Have you thought about how your family will care for seniors? Have you thought about that at all? Have you thought about whether you're going to rely on Obamacare and Social Security and the present system of institutionalized care? What about caring for families or for seniors in this relational family-based context? What about family-based care for the elderly? I mean, what would Jesus do? Biblically speaking, charity comes in the forms of relationships and voluntary loving service. And many of us are asking these questions because this is the time to ask the question. There is a rising movement towards removing the institution in senior care and restoring relationship, and I think we need families to pursue this. What an opportunity. What an opportunity. We're looking at opportunities for family ministry, for restored family economies. This is the perfect opportunity. The perfect opportunity. Okay? Jesus calls us to this. There should be hundreds of thousands of Christians left in America. I hope there are. Who would respond and say, where can our family serve? What can our family do in our family economy to help with the elderly? Perhaps some of the families out there, there are families out there, probably about 10,000 families in America who have adopted. Okay, there ought to be another 100,000 families in America that are interested in restoring relational family-based, home-based care for seniors. All right, two opportunities here to discuss. We're going to talk about how to care for your own parents, and we're also going to talk about how to establish a ministry in your own family to care for the elderly. It's being done here and there around America. We have crisscrossed the nation, and we have found some people who have done this, and they're coming out of the woodwork, and it is incredibly encouraging. And I am going to sponsor in my home a meeting on family-based senior care on November 16th, 2013, in just 3 weeks from now. And I invite all of America, I invite all of our listenership to come to hear from some of the best speakers I've found in America. And I'm flying several of them out to Denver, Colorado to speak on this, including Rudy and Elizabeth Hugo. Elizabeth Hugo has written a book called Life Lessons from My Papa, A Daughter's Journey Caring for Her Elderly Father. And we're going to interview Elizabeth Hugo in just a moment. Dave Buhner recorded this interview just a few weeks ago, and we're going to attach it on this edition of the broadcast because this is an incredibly important book. It was an incredibly touching book. It was an incredibly important book for anybody who wants to be Jesus, where there's opportunity to be Jesus. And that's what Rudy and Elizabeth Hugo did when they cared for Papa. In just a moment, Dave Buhner is going to interview Elizabeth Hugo. Stay tuned.
Air with Mr. and Mrs. Hugo, or is Rudy and Elizabeth Hugo, who have written a book on Lessons from My Papa, A Daughter's Journey in Caring for Her Elderly Father. And I want to welcome Elizabeth and Rudy to the air. Welcome to the Generations with Vision Radio program.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us. I appreciate the opportunity.
What's remarkable about your book is that it's not remarkable in one way. That it is simply a daughter caring for her father, and then God uses that act in order to sanctify and shape your life and really to bless you in ways that you didn't anticipate.
Yes, it was really a platform of transformation, like you said, that I didn't anticipate. And it really came through the many different difficulties and struggles that we faced in caring for my dad, who was total care. He was diabetic, and he was blind, and he was, I had dementia, he was suffering from dementia. And so there were a lot of different challenges that we faced. And in the midst of those challenges, it was very real. My book was very real and about the feelings that I had and the how upsetting some of the situations were. And how I really had to cry out to God and rely on my faith to hear God in the midst of the situation and allow him to do the work that he needed to do in me in order to take care of my dad in the way he needed to be taken care of.
Yeah, I think one of the things that was important to us, just as a background, We're homeschool leaders in the state of New York. My wife and I serve as president of Loving Education at Home here in New York. And I think just the fact that we were homeschooling as a family really gave an opportunity for everybody in our family to grow. And when my wife first began this, it was actually journaling some of her feelings and some of her thoughts. And it was after a short time that she said, you know what, I really believe God's leading me to write a book. And thus the journey began. Again, my father-in-law was 92 years old. And again, came to us, you know, 100% blind with dementia and a diabetic. And so immediately, and my wife will share the story of how that kind of happened, but my wife immediately was thrown into taking over basically all of his life, from financial to medical to, you know, just the absolute care, and we did that in our home. So I'll just let my wife take this time to share how it came about.
Well, it strikes me as I peruse your book that this is not entirely different than getting married and you find out that loving somebody else is hard and difficult and requires sacrifice, or when you have children and you finds out that those little sinners that God gave you require a life of sacrifice. We just happen to be born in this relationship, this covenantal relationship, in a thing called a family, and we have parents, and when we were little, they took care of us, and they changed our soiled diapers, and we honor them at their end of life when they're struggling because they no longer feel useful in this world, but they need to feel loved by those that they've invested in. It strikes me that this is, at least on earth, as close as we get to understanding what Jesus meant, that he would find his life, would give it up. When we serve other people, when we love and instead of expecting to be loved, but when we act in love, we're actually the beneficiary.
Yep.
Yes. And my father, one of the things that I really learned, a lot of people would look at him and say, you know, would be better off probably if the Lord would just take him, that, you know, he's not contributing, that he's like total care. But one of the things that I learned is that my dad was fulfilling his purpose on this earth by just being in our home and what God was doing through his life. In our lives by sacrificing and the things that we were learning. So even though he didn't know it, his life still had meaning. And I think that's important, you know, in a society that, you know, throws away our elderly and unborn children, and to know that his life had meaning and purpose.
And one of the things, too, that I think was important also was that when my father-in-law came to live here, one of the reasons that we really wanted him here, too, is because there was family, but there was multi-generational family. In other words, it was his daughter, his son-in-law, but it was his grandchildren, but also my children's children, which were his great-grandkids. And one of the stories in the book that we have was just my youngest grandchild at the time. I think 2 years old. He had such a special bond with my father-in-law. This is a little guy, Zachary, that would run around and just motoring all the time. And when he would come into our home, the first thing he would do was walk into the house, go over to Grandpa. Now, Grandpa couldn't see him, obviously. He would climb up on Grandpa's lap, and he would sit still. And he did that for no other person at no other time. And it was such a special bond between him. And he was only, you know, again, 2 years old, but there was that bond between them. And throughout, we tell a couple of stories of some real special events that happened with him in our home that really showed us that God was really speaking to really both of them.
The Bible doesn't look at our aging parents from the humanist perspective of utility. It's not what they can do, but it's who they are in Christ. And as we love somebody who is the most helpless, we're loving Christ. And when we care for those who are thirsty and we give them a drink, and those who are hungry and those who are naked and those who are blind and those who are elderly and can't do for themselves, we're really loving Christ. And that always comes back, it seems to me, with more blessing than whatever it cost us.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And,
yeah. and go ahead. I think, you know, in Matthew 25:40, that's one of the verses I use. It says, "Assuredly, I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it unto me." And, you know, I really believe it was a family ministry that, you know, we define ministry in many different ways, but when we serve others, we're serving Christ, the least of these, my brethren.
And I think one of the things, too, that was great is, just to give you also, you know, your listeners a background, we have five children. We have two married daughters. One's 31, now is 30, at the time was 29. My other daughter was 27 at the time. And then we had a son that was going to college, and he was at a Bible college, and he was 20, I guess he was 21 at the time. And we have a daughter that was in home with us at 19, and my youngest son was 13 at the time. And it was just amazing how each one of them, and one of the things in the book that is just a favorite of mine, my wife asked each of us that were part of the caregivers to write how it affected us. So a lot of times when you read a book, it'll be, you know, just a story, just a simple story. But what we did in here, and what really touched my wife's heart, and I mean it touched my heart, was hearing how our kids really felt. They each wrote a chapter in the book, and I also wrote.
Yes, in the epilogue, they each write a chapter in their insights, and it was really such a blessing to hear. You know, we're all individuals, and five children, they all are hitting it from a different perspective, and just, you know, oftentimes, sometimes you feel like you're neglecting your children because he required so much attention. I was only homeschooling one at the time, but two others were at home, and I had grandbabies that I wanted to be a part of their lives. But reading their entries was so eye-opening because, you know, so many times more is caught than taught. And what they had to say showed me that God was so faithful to teach them things that were far greater than my extra attention could have given them. And so that was really a blessing to see how.
Yeah, and they not only learned from your example, but in spite of the dementia and the blindness, what I've read here is it sounds like they learned from Grandpa's example and some of the peace and humor and kindness that he had as a person. Folks, the name of the book is Life Lessons from My Papa. If you're looking for it on Amazon or a place like that, the author is Elizabeth Hugo. It's written in a devotional style, very small chapters with a encapsulated lesson, the same in the epilogue from the other people who were involved. A very readable book, a blessing, I'm sure, if you pick it up. Elizabeth, let's talk about your journey, because your journey was an emotional roller coaster, because before taking care of your father, you had to deal with the reality that your mother was being taken by the Lord. Talk through the loss of the mother, the immediate physical needs that were overwhelming, and how this all kind of got laid at your doorstep.
Right. Well, you know, on February 23rd, 2010, my mom was taken home to be with the Lord. She had pancreatic cancer, and we found out 3 weeks prior that there was something terribly wrong. They wanted to do some tests. They suspected possibly pancreatic cancer, but we really didn't get the final diagnosis till the day before she died. And so when my mom was, she was my dad's primary caregiver at 88. She was an incredible example of sacrifice and love. And she, prior to that, I had been going to my mom lives and dad lived in New Jersey, Toms River, and we live on Long Island. So it was a 3-hour drive, and I was going there to help them as much as I could. We wanted to take them in, but my parents didn't want to leave the home that they loved and the community they had. And so at the end of the day, I knew that it was going to take a crisis in order for someone to come live here. And that crisis came with my mom, who was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. So I went up there, and we settled things here at home and made sure everything was taken care of. And my mom began to teach me the care of my dad the weekend prior to her having to go take tests. And so I just shouted her, and I was very frightened because, you know, when you're talking about taking care of a parent who is total care, you know, your parents usually take care of you, you know. So it's like I thought he'd, you know, maybe be embarrassed or... So it was very difficult, but, you know, once I pushed past my fears. And of course, I was, you know, there was a lot of prayer, and I found that it was really very doable. And, you know, I was glad to do it for my mom, and had wished I had done more for her in the practical care of my dad prior to that. But I was so afraid at the time. So one of the things I encourage people is to help those who are caregiving, and, you know, they'd be amazed at what they can do if they get past their fears. So when I went up there, my mom, 5 days before she died, was brought into the hospital. And I have to say, during those 3 weeks, and this is what I hope that my book can encourage others, is that in the midst of great sorrow, there's also can be great joy. If you see, if you look for Christ in the midst of what's going on. And there were so many times where, you know, that happened for me. So as hard as it was also a beautiful time. If that makes any sense, you know. And then, you know, as far as, you know, when my mom died, we moved my dad in. She died on February 23rd, and March 1st, we moved my dad to our home. And, you know, the rest is all written in the book.
Yep. Right. So you decided to take him inside and care for him rather than to spend your children's inheritance.
Right. That was never really an option. It was really funny because when the doctors, I talked to the doctor about my mom's condition, they said, we know you have to put your father somewhere. So, you know, we know you need a couple of days. But that was never even a thought in my sister and our minds, because, you know, my parents had did such a good job sowing into our lives that there was no doubt that we wanted to take care of them at this point in time.
You know,
but the world does expect that you're going to put them somewhere, you know.
And one of the things, too, is when, you know, when my wife was down there and she was being trained by her mother to do everything, you know, we knew that dad was going to be coming here. We just, you know, we knew that that was going to be it. And I sat down with my children and I said, you know, as much as it's possible, and I, in my mind, it was a done issue. It was really a non-issue that grandpa was going to be with us and he was going to leave this earth, you know, from our home. You know, it wasn't a matter of if he was going to, you know, leave this earth. It was when. And so we didn't know what that was going to be. We didn't know if that was going to be a week, a year, you know, 2 years. And
yeah, as it was, it was 2.5 years later, and he did die in our home. And it was definitely a desire of our heart. He was surrounded with a lot of love. We were able to manage his care. Hospice was in place, although hospice does not come into is not there 24/7. They're there. They're a phone call away. You know, but you basically do most of it. But it was a very, very holy time, actually, a beautiful transition. And, yeah, so he was able to be here and right to the end.
And one of the things that was funny is when we were in the hospital, and my son and I were, when my mother-in-law was in her last day, I took my father-in-law, I said, you know, Dad, I want you to know something. I says, I don't want you to worry about anything for the rest of your life. We're going to take care of you. I don't want you to worry about anything. From this point on, we're going to take care of you until, you know, you go to be with Mom. And my father-in-law was he was a gentleman. He was, you know, he was a quiet man, but he was a gentleman. And he turned to me, and he had this smile on his face. He goes, I know that. Which, you know, it was just one of those moments where, okay, you know, this is what's set. This is what's going to happen. He knows what he's going to expect, and I'll tell you that the miracle is that when my father-in-law came to us with the amount of insulin that he had, the last week before he died, I mean, he was virtually off insulin. I mean, just virtually off insulin. And the VA Medical Center had told us, because he was a Purple Heart World War II veteran, had told us that his blood work was the healthiest of the veterans that they've seen of his age in a long, long time. So, you know, it was just in that atmosphere and in the peace that was within our home and with, you know, everything that was going on. I just think, you know, it was just such a preparation, such a, you know, awesome way to go home.
Relationships are often very complicated things, and there's so many relationships, and they're all beautiful in this story here. We can look at this event, and these events are through your father's eyes. You know, he has just lost his wife, his primary caregiver. He's at a stage of his life where his utility in the marketplace is pretty much used up. All he really has is relationships. All he really has to live for is what he can invest in the people around him. And in his last days, he's investing in his grandkids. He's trying to leave something behind. And I think it's a beautiful perspective. If we have people in this audience who will soon be being cared for by their children, know that your utility in the marketplace is not God's purpose, sole purpose for you in life. Yeah, there's an age and a time for taking dominion, but there's also an age for investing relationship, love, patience in other children's lives. The world would say warehouse these people. Just warehouse them because they're of no use anymore in the marketplace. But God says, no, bring them into your home, honor them. And Rudy, your perspective is interesting too. You're having to shepherd your wife during this time, which is an emotionally traumatic time. She's lost her mother, or God has taken her mother away, and that was fairly sudden as I read it in the book. Dad's coming in the house, huge burden in terms of just her daily activity, what she does. And you're trying to help your wife through this emotional time. Tell me about how you helped your wife help her father.
Can I just interject here, because I want to just honor my husband, because right from the start we were in total unity, and he how he served my dad was so endearing to me. It was amazing, because you know how the scriptures say that husbands love your wives as Christ loved the church, and Christ laid down his life for the church. And I have to say, my husband did that, and he modeled that for his kids, and that was a tremendous a beautiful thing in our home to see and grow from.
Well, I thank you, honey. When Dad came into our home, because my heart was set, because I was committed, because I knew that this was going to be the long haul, my goal was just to make sure a couple of things. Number one, whatever my wife needed to have done, I needed to do it. Second is I needed to be a sounding board when she was going through some of the tough times. You know, I had to pray with her. I had to, hold her and go through some of those things that happened, because, I think there is no, there's no way of preparing for this. There really is not a way to prepare, to caregive somebody fully. There's just not. And so what I did, one of the ways that I bless my wife is, she was running full blown from the morning. And so at nighttime, I took over completely. It's kind of like, when a husband goes out to work, he comes home and he says to the wife, okay, I'll take care of the kids. Well, when I came home, it was my wife's break. This was a time now for me to care for my father-in-law. And I was the one that put him to bed. I was the one that got up in the middle of the night, because he got up, mostly two times, sometimes three times a night. And so that's what I wound up doing. And the other thing that I was really concerned with, and I think this is important for anybody that is in caregiving for husbands, is you have to make time when you take your wife away for short respites. And I can honestly say, and my wife will be able to back this up, there were times when we took 1 or 2 days. My sister-in-law would come and take care of Dad. We'd take 1 or 2 days. And those 1 or 2 days were just such a gift from God. And it was like a fast charge to our lives and to our relationship.
One of my favorite parts of the book is the number of pictures that you placed in there. And I got to tell you, as I look through these pictures, they're wonderful pictures, because people are smiling and they're happy. I don't see tired, grumpy people who feel put out. And my favorite picture is the next to the last one. Time for worship 2 days before Papa died is how it's captioned. And there, I assume this is a grandchild playing the guitar.
Yeah, well, actually, that's my daughter's friend, Kayla, and my husband was playing the guitar, too. We didn't get him in there. Not a very big room, but we had all these people packed in there, playing instruments and singing. So.
And worshiping. Yeah, that's what we did. We did the last 2 days, because we always had worship music on, during the day and into the night. But that was an awesome time. So
this is just the picture of the covenant family. We worship together. We live together. We don't hide our children from the realities of sin and death. We teach them that this life is but a vapor, and that we pass from this life to the next. And how we live our life, we get one life to live for Christ, and we only have one death that we can give to Christ too. And we face it with the comfort of the saints and the family and the covenant body around us. My second favorite picture here is it's kind of a funny one. It says poured salt all over the table just because.
Yes, I'm glad you like that. I really debated whether to put that in there because I didn't want to expose my dad, but there was a lot of funny times like that.
Well, let's face it, we've all wanted to do that since we were 5 years old and told we couldn't. And you get to an age where you can do that and get away with it again. Obviously, life is messy and relationships are messy and there's hardships and there's tears and there's probably times that you honored your father in this book by not including the stories of those times where it was more difficult, where he wasn't funny but maybe grumpy. But the blessings. Talk about what you think God blessed you, character-wise, family-wise. What were the summary, the short list of blessings from this experience?
Okay. Well, I could give you, we had to learn a lot about being flexible. We had a lot of caregivers coming in. We had people coming in like physical therapists, occupational therapists at different times. A home health aide who would shower my dad, but all these people coming into our home, they were really strangers coming into our home. And it was, you could look at it two ways. They were either, they were intruders, or you can receive them as helpers and part of God's provision. And I think that I struggled with that because, it was my home, and they were coming into our private space. And so when I was able to receive them as God's blessing, something switched, and then we were able also to befriend them and pray with them, and it was, make them part of the family. And I think that they were really blessed by that. So, we had to learn a lot about flexibility. We had to...
Well, Elizabeth's thinking of that. I just want to share two stories. There were very tragic things that happened. The caregiver Elizabeth was just talking about actually lost her daughter-in-law while she was caring for us. She lost her daughter-in-law the night before, and that morning she was so committed that she came here. And when she walked in, I said, "How you doing?" She just started crying and telling us, and we just immediately embraced her and prayed. And, that's just like one of the many things. But I think one of the most special things for us was when Dad went home to be with the Lord. He had to be buried in New Jersey, so there wasn't really time for a quote-unquote a funeral. So what we decided to do is the following week, we decided to have a memorial service for Dad in our home. And, we just said whoever wants to come can come. And what wound up happening is the two hospice nurses came to our home. One of them had three of her children with her. And she had told her children, "I want you to see a family that did it right. I want you to see a family that cared for their, loved ones in an extraordinary way." And they both came to our home, and we don't know where they, if they were believers or not believers. But what we did as a fellowship after they had to leave kind of towards the end of it, but we prayed for them. We actually put them in the middle of the room, and many of us gathered together and just prayed for them and prayed a blessing for their ministry to my father-in-law and to, for all of it. And it was fantastic. It was, and I'm sure, and I know it was life-changing for them.
Folks, you want to expand the kingdom of God. You want to impact your neighborhood. You want to fulfill the Great Commission and teach what Christ has commanded. This is how it's done. It's not done in the tracts. It's not done in the big programs. It's really not even done by this radio program. What it's done by is the saints living their creed. The song says they'll know we are Christians by our love, but that starts in the household. You want to reach the world, love. Love your parents. Take care of them. actually believe that fifth commandment, that if you honor your parents, you'll be blessed. Participate in the sufferings of Christ as you bear burdens for elderly parents and for those who are downtrodden, those who don't have utility in life. This is the Christian life. This is the main means that the kingdom grows. I applaud you both, and you know, I'll give you a high five from half a country away saying, great job, you have done much for the kingdom of God, probably more than you realize. By much, much more is caught than taught in this world. The world won't understand it, and that's okay. It's actually great, because then when they struggle for understanding, they'll understand their need for something outside of themselves. Folks, the book is called Life Lessons from My Papa, A Daughter's Journey for Caring for Her Elderly Father, although there's a lot of other stories in here than just the daughter. Thank you so much for being on the Generations Radio program.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much, David.
God bless you, and keep up the good work with the homeschooling, with the care of the elderly, and all that you do for the kingdom of God.
Thank you.
Amen. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to an important interview, a very important segment of this program. I think we're taking a very important turn on this program to address issues that are near and dear to God's heart and ought to be near and dear to our hearts as well. And we want to restore the concept of caring for the elderly, a concept that's been around, especially in Christian circles, for thousands of years. We want to bring this back in the 21st century, a relational, family-based care for our seniors. The weakest among us, those that need the attention, those that need those relationships. And we're going to establish an organization in America, and hopefully future conferences as well. Right now, it's just a meeting in our basement on November 16th, 2013. On Saturday, November 16th, we're coming together in my basement to talk about something very important that's near and dear to God's heart and should be important to anybody in America who plans to retire or who plans to grow old, or anybody in America who knows anybody or is the son or a daughter of anybody who has grown old. We are establishing a movement towards relationship-based, home-based, family-based, relational care for the elderly, and that's November 16th, 2013. And friends, if you're interested in this, we've got some great speakers that are going to be speaking. Todd Strasser, who's organizing the National Christian Home-Based Senior Care Network. We have Marie Fila, who's homeschooling mom, who actively leads a home-based senior care ministry. We have Rudy Hugo, and you just heard the interview from Elizabeth Hugo, his wife, who wrote the book Life Lessons from My Papa. They're coming out to present on this very issue. Carmen Bowman, who is a blogger for the Institute for Person-Centered Care, also Senator Lundberg here in the state of Colorado, should be addressing the group. And Steve Lamb, who is a homeschooling dad and owner of an organization called Bright Star Home Health Care. So we're going to be considering things like family life considerations, legal environment for senior care, home accommodations and family dynamics, family ministry and business in the area of senior care, taking care of your own parents, home health care options and alternatives, church and family and our seniors, visiting the elderly in the rest homes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Anybody out there is interested at any level in being Jesus and caring for the seniors in our society, in our communities around us, needs to come to this conference. Again, free. This is going to be free of charge. We're not going to charge anything at all. In fact, my family will provide the lunch. And you need to RSVP with Todd Strasser at toddls@hotmail.com. That's toddls@hotmail.com. And check out my blog for more information on the relational family-based senior care program we are initiating at our home on November 16th. If you're interested, RSVP right away at toddls@hotmail.com. Just email Todd Strasser at toddls@hotmail.com. Ladies and gentlemen, this, I think, is a very important thing we are doing for the future of elderly care. This will impact the lives of millions. This will probably impact your life as you grow old and as you seek a relational context in which you will be cared for. Ladies and gentlemen, this, I think, is the future of Christian ministry in America, in the Western world. This will be what it takes to replace the socialist institutionalized system that will probably end in mass euthanasia. This is the alternative. Let's get started with it. Let's get started with one little meeting in my basement on November 16th. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.